You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Florida, in Cocoa, Florida. We're on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. All our shows can be heard on the World Wide Web, and Ellen will tell you how to tune in and listen.
Yes, go to 1510wwbc.com. You'll find that on-demand button, and you just click that on-demand button. You may have to download a little something, but for the most part, you should be able to hear it right away. Us live every Monday at 1 o'clock.
My co-host Ellen and I are here every Monday. We talk about things like teaching tolerance, seeking justice, fighting hate, fighting division, talking to people about not spreading fear in these United States of America, and so many social issues and things that are going on right here in Brevard and around the nation. And we're happy that you all are joining us on air. And I know so many people download our podcast and they listen to it after the show. Today we have an action-packed show. We've got Miss Wanda Trotter is here, and she is going to be speaking. We have the second half of the show reserved for Miss Wanda, who is the founder of Worldwide Solutions and Technologies, a corporation that provides mobile and virtual solutions to corporations and so much more. So Wanda, welcome to our show, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, well, she has good energy. I can feel it.
Yes, I know. And we even wore good dresses.
I'm excited. Yes.
And we have our call-in guest will be today is Shelley Taylor Page. She has been a licensed attorney since 1993. She is a law professor, and she will be calling in on our show at 321-632-1510.
Excellent. And I posted actually under our Facebook post for today's show, I posted that Shelley Taylor Page, law professor, a Q&A at Lincoln Memorial University Duncan School of Law. So it's a really great read for those of you who are trying to get to know Shelley before she joins us on the show here.
Well, for our listeners who are tuning in, Shelley Taylor Page, her journey as a law professor, she has taken on so many different challenges in her career that she has fought for victims in human trafficking, domestic violence, not just here domestically, but internationally as well. And she co-authored a textbook called Human Trafficking. I'm so pleased that our show, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, brings us in contact with so many wonderful people that we can keep in contact with, not just the day that they call in, but forever.
Yeah.
And they do become part of my friends.
Absolutely.
And as everybody know, I'm 55 years old, and I am entering my third quarter. You know, my life is divided into thirds. One third, two-thirds. This is my third.
Okay.
And some people say it's quarters. So some people say I'm entering my second quarter. And so my third quarter, Shelley Taylor Page is included in that. So she's on the phone.
She's included. Hello, how are you doing?
Girl, I've been following you on Facebook, and that diet that you're on, you got to write a book about it.
Oh, my. Plants for the win.
Yes. My gosh.
For sure.
I looked at the pictures. I'm like, look at her. I mean, you look terrific.
Wasn't even that long ago that I was really, really... And it's not even just about being heavy. For me, I was in a lot of pain. My knees, my hips, my ankles, you know, tired all the time. And it is amazing how our body responds when we put in good fuel.
Well, you know, there's a lady here, Wanda, who is pointing to her knees as you speak. And yes. And she's saying, me. She wants to know what your diet is. But we'll have to have you back on another time for that topic. But why don't
I'd
you?
I'd love to.
Oh, yes, we will. You're going to be a regular because, Ellen, I told Ellen, I said, I feel like I've known Shelley all my life. So tell our listeners a little bit. You're currently a law professor at Florida A&M University College of Law, correct?
Correct. I'm a visiting professor there. I'm entering my second year, but I have been a law professor for 16 years. I spent 6 years at St. Mary's in San Antonio, Texas, 9 years at a law school in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I am now in my second year at Florida A&M. And so prior to this, I was a criminal prosecutor for about 5 years in Austin, Texas. And then I was actually a stay-at-home mom after that for about 4 years, and then worked for just a year at a state agency that basically prosecutes teachers for various infractions. And it is amazing how many teachers have inappropriate sexual relationships with students.
That brings back a lot of memories. But, you know, even when I was back in Trinidad and Tobago, a young teenage girl, I think we saw a lot of inappropriate touching and things like that. But we, you know, back then, nobody really taught us what was appropriate and inappropriate. And so, when you go back in your memory bank, I think a lot of us even had relatives who touched inappropriately as well. And, you know, you just kind of say, well, this is part of life, and your parents tell you, just move on, you know?
That's right. It's very scary, though, especially when that touching impacts a child negatively for the rest of their life, and they're never really told it is okay to get therapy and to deal with what happened and that you were not at fault. So that kind of got me on my path of looking out for victims. I grew up in a home where there was a domestic violence, and it was never really talked about. And I know that we're supposed to be talking about Trump's nomination to the Supreme Court, Amy Coney Barrett, but even looking at our relationship in this country with Donald Trump, it's an abusive relationship.
We are being abused. We're all part of his reality show, and we're not even getting paid.
Yes. That's exactly right. And we're getting the short end of the stick. And sadly, I haven't looked to see what the numbers are today, but more than 212,000 people, the last time I checked, are dead as a result of failed and abysmal leadership in this country for, you know, towards the coronavirus. And some people might say, well, we're not doing that bad. Well, compare us to other countries around the world. No other country has the sheer number of deaths that we do.
Right. And you know what? What gets me crazy is some people would say, well, they were going to die anyway. No. People have diseases that they live with, and it's under control with medication and exercise and diet. A lot of people who caught the COVID-19 did not have to die.
That's exactly right. And if we go with that train of thought, then what about other countries? Why can't we say, well, those 200,000 people would have died anyway? And that's the point. So we dealt poorly with this disease when it came in. And so when you look at the number of decisions that Trump has made that have negatively impacted our country, I don't see how anybody would think that a conservative judge coming in to replace a judge who was not conservative could not be a bad thing. Here we are in a global pandemic where people are struggling for health care. And so, Cito, when we look at the people that are disproportionately being impacted by this pandemic, this coronavirus, COVID-19, it is generally African Americans and Hispanics. Disproportionately Black and brown people are dying from this disease. So what happened that caused Hispanics and African Americans to be in a position that when this disease, this illness comes along, their bodies are not equipped to fight it like other people? Lack of access to quality health care, lack of access to good food, to the knowledge of eating healthy, which brings me back to one of the main reasons I eat a plant-based diet is to keep my immune system up. There are foods that we eat that cause inflammation in our body. Inflammation, that's where that pain comes from. So when we eat sugar, when we eat high fatty foods, when we eat processed foods, all of that is causing inflammation in our joints.
So it goes back to investing in the communities and investing in education,
yes,
at an early age. And, you know, my friend Wanda is going to jump in here because she is smiling,
yes,
as you speak, because I think, mm-hmm, you are speaking not just to Ellen and I, but you're speaking to Wanda too. Mm-hmm. Jump right in.
Yes.
Well, for sure, especially with the COVID-19, so many people who have problems, have medical problems due to diet, due to lack of exercise, these are the people that are having a long, like, extending problems, or the, you know, unfortunately, are
they're
passing.
They're called long haulers.
Right.
They're going to be sick for a while.
Right. And then after they recover, they're only able to recover to an extent. They have ongoing problems as a result of the COVID-19. So I completely understand. Like, that's something that when you speak about not having healthy foods, well, in a lot of the disenfranchised neighborhoods, the food in the grocery stores, you cannot find good, healthy food. Like, the produce is halfway spoiled. You can only find, like, mostly sugar products, lots of sodas, lots of candy. But to find good produce and quality produce, you have to go to different neighborhoods or different, you know, grocery stores. So
you're addressing the issue in a wholesome way, Shelley, because people don't think of it that way. They're saying, well, COVID-19 is affecting people, but then you expand it and you say, well, how is it affecting people?
And the dollar menu
doesn't help.
people are running out of money. You know, when the dollar menu is there and available, I mean, there's nothing healthy on the dollar menu.
Right.
There's nothing good
exactly
for you.
Right.
Healthy food should be more affordable.
And when you feed your body dollar food, you can expect dollar health.
Yep, and dollar results.
Think about it. Our immune system is basically our army. So if we have not fed our immune system, and our cells are living cells, so when we're feeding our cells things that are dead and dying and decaying, then that's what it's going to do to our cells. So we have to feed ourselves dark, leafy green vegetables, plain old vegetables, even starches, legumes, all of those things help us. So when COVID comes along, well, if my body is already struggling to help me with diabetes or high blood pressure or obesity or heart disease or lung disease, whatever the thing is, here comes COVID, and my body is saying, whoa, hold on. I'm already over here trying to fight diabetes. Now I got to turn around and fight this? Your body's not strong enough to fight both. And a disproportionate number of people of color have for so long eaten an unhealthy diet, living in desert communities where we have, like you talked about earlier, the grocery stores. Organic, what? There's no organic.
Right, yes. Some people have no idea what that is.
And here's the other thing. In addition to not eating proper foods and a healthy diet, you have the additional burden of how does people of color deal with stress? And that's also falls under healthcare and mental health. So COVID-19, when people just make a blanket statement sometimes and they say, oh, COVID-19 is affecting minorities and people of color. Well, guess what? I'm glad that you, Shelley, and Wanda, and Ellen and I are taking the time to explain that statement. So how does people of color, in your opinion, deal with the stressful time that we're living in right now with COVID-19 and with all the hate and division and fear in our nation? How do we deal with that?
Well, I think African Americans specifically have been dealing with the stress of racism and police brutality and oppression, systemic institutionalized racism, for hundreds of years. And it manifests itself in high blood pressure, also called hypertension, heart disease, internalizing the discrimination that African Americans face on a daily basis. And this is not just me making this up. This is study after study shows this. As a matter of fact, I believe she's the current Surgeon General for California. She wrote a book called The Well of, it's on my shelf right here. But she talked about how this racism has hurt African Americans, and we internalize it, and it comes out as high blood pressure and various other things. And so we don't, in the black community, we're just now getting to the point where we agree that mental health is something that we, it's called the deepest well. Here is my book, The Deepest Well, and it's healing the long-term effects of childhood adversity. Her name is Dr. Nadine Burke Harris. She's a medical doctor, and she's got a great TED Talk where she talks about people of color internalizing the oppression and the systemic racism that we face every single day. So,
there's a saying that says we are what we eat, think, and breathe. And if you are in an environment, like you say, where, you know, mom and dad is worrying about how to pay for healthcare, mom and dad is worrying how to pay rent, mom and dad is worrying about who's going to educate the children, where can we find an apprenticeship that would take a black child or a Hispanic child or a minority? Because most people, they look at your color before they give you a chance. And so you bring that stress home into the house, and now the children are feeling the stress. The parents are stressed out, and you're absolutely correct. It affects your blood pressure, your mental health, the way you see life. Because, you know, people talk about all lives matter, but in actualities, do we really have policies for affordable housing and a decent wage and health care for all that reflects that statement that all lives matter? We don't.
We do not. Sadly, we do not. And so, you know, they say the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. If you look at every single metric, look at where people of color are on those metrics. We're talking about pay equity. For every $1 a white man makes, a black woman makes 67 cents. For every $100 of wealth a white family has, a black family has $5.04. So we can look at the medical metrics. We can look at education. We can look at pay equity. Hell, there's even racism in farming. If you look at the farmers, how the government hands out money to farmers, there's racism in that. We're talking redlining. We're talking gerrymandering. Look at you know, the way we appoint, it's something like 93% of all district attorneys are white males. The vast majority of people that are in prison don't go to trial. They end up with a plea bargain. So you have a third of the population, white men are about a third of the population, and they are handing down sentences for a population that's about 60%. And that's how we have disproportionate number of people of color in prison. So when we talk about having rules and policies and regulations, we are living in a country where the system is designed to promulgate and promote white. It is designed to denigrate and suppress everybody else.
And so, and where do we go from here? Because COVID-19 brought all of us together in our homes. People are home now and they're able to read, they're able to talk, they're able to see what's going on. And we all, you know, people talk about systemic racism comes with systemic changes. But then you hear somebody like Shaq O'Neal, who did not vote. And then you hear other people make excuses and says, well, a lot of people don't vote and that's their right. I mean, can you talk to our audience here on Viewpoint with Seed and Friends, Professor Shirley Taylor Page, a little bit about why it's important to cast that vote?
Okay. So one of the things that I want to say is you've got to know that the vote must be significant, because there is concerted effort to repress and suppress the vote. That is your voice. A vote is only you saying, this is my thought and this is my vote on that thought. I believe marijuana should be legal, for instance, and that's just an example. If I believe marijuana should be legal, then I should be able to check that box and my check counts for something. Because so many people believe that the vote doesn't matter. You are basically giving your voice away. You're giving your thoughts away. And when we don't run for office, when we don't vote for the positions and the policies and the people in office who stand for what we believe in, we're basically allowing other people to speak for us. And when you are not at the table, you are being served.
Wow, that's powerful. Can you repeat that? That is powerful.
That is.
And so we all deserve a seat at the table. When you are not at the table, you are being served. And I don't mean served in a good way. Your
policies
are not.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
other people are making a decision for you.
Nobody, Sita, I thank you for this opportunity to speak. Nobody can speak for me like I speak for me. And people's vote is they're speaking for themselves. And when we give away that right, that vote, that people like John Lewis died for, and we always talk about John Lewis, but there are a number of people whose names and faces we will never know who died so that we could vote. My mother and father grew up in segregated Louisiana, went to Southern University in Baton Rouge, were not allowed in Louisiana, LSU University, because they're black. And so my mom and dad many, many times would be beaten and water hosed just to try to register to vote.
Yeah.
And so for your listeners who don't understand the significance of voting, if you don't hear anything else I've said today, keep eating your processed food, but get your little behind out there and vote.
Keep eating your processed
food.
Stop at McDonald's on the way. Well, that brings me to the hearings that started this morning. And RBG's death and the implications of a new justice coming on or not coming on. And, you know, I feel like it has emboldened older women like myself to be older and smarter and more bolder with my voice to say we're not going backwards. I mean, everyone wants to be respectful. We understand that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. But I think we have to band together as women, as people in this country, and say, listen, certain things are not up for sale. Come on now, you know?
Amen. Amen. Mm-hmm. And I think, too, it's very sad that this justice who is coming in does not represent interests similar to the justice that just passed away. And one of the things that I was bringing up earlier about health care being so significant right now, this justice is on track to withdraw the Affordable Care Act, which would cause tens of thousands of people to lose their medical insurance. So just the other day, I read an article when Donald Trump went to Walter Reed. It is estimated that the health care services he received are somewhere almost, and that it's like $470,000, almost $500,000, just for him being in that hospital from a Friday to a Monday. And he paid $750 for the year 16 and 17 in federal income taxes. But he is right now trying to appoint a woman to the Supreme Court who is on par to withdraw the Affordable Care Act from people who pay far more than $750.
Yeah, people who scrimp and save. People who scrimp and save to pay their taxes at the end of the year because they don't want to get thrown in jail for not paying taxes.
That's correct.
But here's the other thing. So how do we explain that when we're having a conversation with someone who says, well, he's the president and he deserves tip-top care? In my book, all lives should be treated equally. If he can get tip-top care, I think everybody who gets infected with COVID-19 and asked for a test, asked for the medication, asked to be tested again, they should get it. They should receive it. That's what
correct.
We do, right?
That's correct. And for the person who says he's the president, he should get tip-top care. He's the president. He should also pay taxes according to the share, according to the percentage that he, whatever range he's in, he should pay taxes as well. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And this is a man that has demeaned and put down COVID-19, said it was going to just go away, disappear, talking about injecting bleach into the human body. And so this is a person that has never taken seriously.
Well, he's irresponsible with his words because, you know, so let's, we have like 4 minutes left in the segment. And I wanted to ask you,
So let's pivot away and say, like, what would the United States look like with a Kamala Harris, Joe Biden presidency? Let's say that on November 4th, President Trump leaves office like all presidents do and thank the person who wins. And what happens then with COVID-19?
Of course, assuming they get into office and there's a smooth transition of power, which Trump has said he has not agreed to thus far. But I'm sure, based on what I have read and what I know about the two candidates, Harris and Biden, they listen to experts. They listen. They follow the science. And they would have a concerted plan, not just some haphazard, let's let each state decide what the state wants to do. I'm going to just be for Democrats and not Republicans, which is what this man, he's not a president. He's an illegitimate occupant of the White House, but having a concerted plan where you're not just for the people that voted for you. You are the president of the United States of America. And I believe that a Biden-Harris presidency would represent all people, where we look at what the CDC guidelines, where the scientists are free to make recommendations based on science and not on politics.
Right. And you know what drives me crazy too is the same people who are against science are the same people when they get a cough or a cold, they're going to the doctor to get a prescription for Z-Pak, which is made by scientists.
That's right. And then another thing, this experimental cocktail that Donald Trump got the other day in Walter Reed, part of that was made from cells from aborted fetuses. So there is science in being able to use certain aspects of the human body. He's against abortion, but the very cocktail he received used cells from aborted fetuses. So you can't talk out of both sides of your neck and expect people to think you have any kind of credibility.
Well, you know, and the other thing too, Shelley, like a lot of people don't read, right? And we saw in 2017, the tax cut overwhelmingly went to support the top 1% and major corporations. Where did the people who support President Trump and are out in the rallies and everything is, where are they when it comes to time to read and understand exactly what's going on? It almost looks as if they are being told how to vote. Because when you think about the tax cut overwhelmingly going to the top 1% and major corporations, something is wrong with the man on the street who can't pay his rent, can't pay his health care, don't know where his kids are going to go to school. And some of them say, well, the Lord will provide. I believe the Lord provides as well. But guess what? You got to help yourself. You got to get to that library, get to that news article, read, do some research. Right. Because somebody else is doing it for you.
Yes. Yes. And that is the exact truth. All of us, no matter who we are, we need to stay well-informed, well-read. But I think, Sita, we are a society where we want everything fast and quick. So just feed it to me. Just tell me what you want me to know. Tell me what you want me to do. Tell me what you want me to say. That is how we have lambs led to the slaughter.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, I know I see Wanda shaking her head a lot while you're speaking because she agrees with you. You know, how do we tell, in 30 seconds or less or more, well, I'll give you a minute, what is that final push that you can make to voters out there, no matter who you are, why this election is so important for us to get our voice heard?
I think one of the main things that we have on the ballot right now is human decency, kindness, respect. We have lost that under this current administration. We have got to get away from name calling and backbiting and pointing fingers at one another. The main thing, in my opinion, is humanity. We have to remember we are all children of God. And even if you don't believe in God, we all deserve a modicum of decency and dignity and respect that we owe to one another. That is on the ballot. We are talking about health care on the ballot. We're talking about police brutality, which goes back to decency and kindness. That is on the ballot. Get out, vote, make your thoughts and your opinions known in the manifestation of your voice, of your vote. And I beg anybody who's on the fence, get online. Google makes things easy. Find where people stand, what the issues are. I don't know how anybody could be living in this country after 4 years and be undecided. Those are the people that I really would have to pull my hair out, how somebody could be undecided at this point. When we have a president that can look at black women and call them dogs.
Yeah. And, and you know, the other thing, too, somebody just sent me a text. How can someone still be on the fence after all this time? I mean, you have to be living under a rock. I mean, all you have to do is look around in your own neighborhoods, talk to your own family and friends. I mean, just like the veteran returning from Iraq or Afghanistan, just like he has health care, doesn't he care about his cousins, his friends? Like we have a mouthful of food on the table, don't you care about the woman who's cutting your hair or the man cutting your grass?
Amen.
I mean, I think you hit it right on the head. We are all children of God, and at the end of the day, we all want food, water, shelter, affordable housing, a place to live. And most important, if you get sick, you want to know that you have a village that cares about you as well, because if you take care of the village, your village comes back and take care of you when your turn comes.
That's right. And but see, I think sometimes we can't see ourselves as that man standing on the corner begging for money. And so we have got to have empathy and sympathy for our fellow man. Do unto others what we learned in kindergarten, as you would have done unto you. We have lost that under this current administration. We have got to get back to loving one another and really, truly being our brother and sister's keeper.
So, and it's safe to say that Professor Shelley Page is supporting the Biden-Harris ticket. And I think when I look at that ticket, what I see is respect and honesty and dignity and a sense of calm. It's almost like we need a dog in the White House again, too.
Yes, that's right. We should have known something was wrong when there wasn't a dog in the White House. What I also see is diversity. I see Kamala Harris's mother being from India. I see her father coming from Jamaica. I see Joe Biden a Catholic. I see diversity. I see a well-rounded group of people to represent all interests. Look at this current administration. It's mainly older, white, rich men. That's what's running our country right now. And and it's sad, though, because an older, white, rich man should still have the empathy and sympathy to look out for a little black girl. That's where we have to get, where we look out for one another no matter the color of the skin. If you have an accent, if you smell different, if you grew up in a village or if you grew up in a city, we've got to get back to the basics of loving one another just because God created us all.
Right. I think what you're trying to say is we have an inclusive party. We have a big tent.
Yes.
We take people in without judgment, you know. And I think Ellen has given me the signal that, what a great segment. I really love having you call in. And I think the next time you call in, we're going to talk about the plant-based diet. And because it ties into healthcare,
it does.
I love it.
It's removing all those toxins, not just from your food, but also from your environment and from the stress and all the craziness that's out there. Thank you so much, Shelley Taylor Page, for calling in. We are going to take a quick break to listen
to
our sponsors, and we want to thank Cloud9 Sleep Shop for sponsoring today's show. We'll be right back after these messages.
Families will love the Space Coast Symphony Orchestra's Music at the Watering Hole, a free online family concert. The program will feature a stimulating original story by national best-selling author Michelle Wallace Campanelli that will come to life on screen with a film presentation created and directed by award-winning Mendex Studios. King of Africa, Kojo the Lion, was surprised when a box fell off a tourist bus and dropped a symphony of musical instruments near his watering hole. With a great love for music, Kojo decides to bring all of the wild animals of the savannah together. Could these natural enemies learn to get along to become an orchestra? And just what would they play? The concert will feature music from Madagascar, Lion King, Zootopia, Jungle Book, Jurassic Park, The Croods, and more. So once again, that's Music at the Watering Hole, Sunday, November the 8th at 3 p.m. This is a SpaceCoastSymphony.org online event. Music at the Watering Hole, Sunday, November the 8th, 3 o'clock, SpaceCoastSymphony.org. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud 9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a great segment with Professor Page.
Yeah.
Wow.
Shelley Taylor Page. If you want to look her up on Facebook. She's got a fantastic Facebook page.
If I were in her class, I'd get an A+ because yeah, I would be paying attention.
She would. We'd all be paying attention.
And she is a visiting professor of law at Florida A&M University College of Law. Wow.
Just got a very extensive background and bio.
Well, you know, God is great, right? He sends such wonderful people our way that could not just help me in my life to learn and grow and become a better person, but I'm able to use this forum here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we thank WWBC and Paul for giving us that opportunity to keep community radio alive and share such wonderful information in such a fun, unscripted, educational manner, because nothing is scripted. We just talk.
No, absolutely. We just talk. Remember, too, that the big message is getting out there to vote. You know, if you got any message from that first segment, get out there and vote. Well, and plant-based diet. That was the second message, right?
Right. Well, she was right, because she said 90% of our elected officials in the United States are white. And we, as citizens who vote, we need to understand that our elected officials need to be held accountable to the issues that systematically and disproportionately affect people of color. Mm-hmm. And that's what I brought Miss Wanda in today, but I want Miss Wanda to tell our listeners a little bit about herself and her business, because I was totally impressed with her when we met, I think about a year ago, making apps and being a paralegal and taking all that experience and putting it into something she absolutely loves. So let's hear a little bit about you, Miss Wanda.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thank you. So I do own a business, and what we do is we help companies grow by minimizing their cost, but also growing their profits with the use of mobile apps. And so with mobile apps, it's a much more effective way to market your business and get out to people compared to websites. A lot of people are familiar with how websites work, or even mobile websites. But with mobile apps, one of the main things that you can do is you can communicate with your app users like immediately. So say, for example, if you have a message that you want to send out today. Now, if you put it on your website, who's going
to
see it?
Right. People are so busy sometimes they even wait for the computer to log on and get to that section.
Exactly. So, but with mobile apps, what you have is called a push notification. You can send a message out, and no matter who has their app, like, they can register or they don't have to register in the app, but they're going to immediately get the message, kind of like a text.
Wow.
And so you can, like, say, for example, if you have upcoming events, you can have a link there for them to just touch and register. You can have, you can attach videos. There's all sorts of things, type of communication that push notifications can do, which you cannot do with the website.
Right.
Because if you just put something
And it's user-friendly.
It's very user-friendly.
Right.
It's made to be used on a device, any type of mobile device. So that's one of the main things that is a big advantage of having a mobile app compared to a mobile website. Then there's also event. It's kind of like an event management type of tool. So with managing your events, again, it's much more effective. The communications, the having your vendors, having your suppliers.
So it's business made easy.
Exactly. It's like your business on your phone.
Yeah.
And everything is so immediate gratification right now. So
people don't have time.
Yeah. So if it's if there's a load speed issue on your website, if there's anything that graphics that doesn't come up quickly or efficiently, the mobile app is what kind of takes that place of that. Yeah,
yes.
So
that's
awesome. How did you transition from being a paralegal for 20 years, you said,
yes,
into this business?
Well, funny enough, I've always been a computer person.
So, like Ellen. Ellen is a computer person.
I've always been a computer person. When I worked in the legal field, I did a lot of electronic evidence. And so I've always like combined my legal background with my computer knowledge. And so I continued on that path. Eventually, I became to specialize in electronic evidence. And I worked with international clients and international attorneys, where we would have to work remotely with each other.
Yes.
And so that gave me a different type of knowledge base about how to use technology, because, you know, with lawsuits, everything has to be completely confidential, has to be completely secure. And so with my like learning how to do work internationally with a lot of clients, UK, South America, I've always been so interested in it, and I just learned more and more. So eventually, when I first started my business, my company that was my employer became my client. So I started, you know, I just went out on my own and
you
started,
took a risk on yourself, girl.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And it was on my birthday.
Very good.
Happy
birthday present. Yes.
Right. So, you know, it's really challenging, but at the same time, it's very rewarding. It can be very stressful. So, you know, like Ms. Taylor was saying, we need to like,
yeah,
you know, it can really be stressful, but I,
they say that being an entrepreneur is like jumping out of a plane and figuring it yeah, out on the way
it
down.
It is. Like you got to either swim or
that's
drown.
Right.
So, did you have any challenges being a woman of color when you opened your business? And is that sometimes an obstacle in your way?
It is always an obstacle for me. Now, I would say that I'm kind of creative, and I do kind of have a way with, I've had to learn how to speak the language and how to like put myself in a position so that people actually take you seriously. Because if you're a woman, first of all, that counts against you. And then the color of your skin counts against you as well. So what I kind of do is I try to build relationships. It's mostly about building relationships. So
isn't that life? Life is about relationships.
Right, yes. Right. And so when you have relationships with clients, no matter the color, if they really love your work and they have a good rapport with you, they are going to stick with you and they're going to refer other clients. So I do get most of my business by referrals.
Yes.
So I don't do a whole lot of marketing, which I probably should do more, but it is my relationships.
Right. So they refer.
Yes.
Lots of referrals.
Exactly. And some of them, like I said before, even prior bosses, prior firms that I've worked with, just having that ongoing relationship, they will kind of put in a good word for me, or just send somebody my way. So that, I definitely have had my struggles or challenges. I've had some companies that will say, oh yeah, we're interested in doing business with you. And then when I walk in the door and it's like, when they kind of see me or see my face, like I sound different over the phone.
Yeah.
But when I walk in the door and I see the change in, you know, the expression, you know, the body language.
So they change their idea. Exactly. They don't want to do business with a black woman.
Exactly. Yeah. You see the body language change.
They want you to dip yourself in a bucket of bleach.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, like, okay. You know, you look so different.
I know, and it's such a sad feeling too. You know, like when someone you could, it's kind of like a sixth sense. Mm-hmm. You could sense when somebody don't want to be around you because you're a different color or mm-hmm. you're a different race or you're a different religion,
mm-hmm.
and it really kind of makes you feel less of a human being.
Right.
You have to have
right.
self-confidence like me that's going through the roof mm-hmm. to say, you know what, I belong on this earth just like you do. So guess what?
Yeah, I've definitely grown that thick skin, and I kind of feel like it's their loss. It's their loss because, let's say, for example, I'm not going to call the exact name, but there's a local golfing company, and I spoke with them. I actually had done a demo, and so I sent the demo. They loved it. But when I got there, they loved it. They couldn't wait, and, like, everything was a go. I went to the office. And so there were some guys waiting around. I'm not sure which one was the guy I was supposed to meet because there were some guys in the office. And so they walked out. And then the young lady came and told me, oh, well, I'm so sorry. The manager, he forgot that he had, like, I'm here. Like, you could have called me on the way if you forgot that you had a conflict in your schedule or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm, like, literally here. And now somebody just walks out and says, oh, you know, we're sorry, he can't meet with you today. And so I did follow up a couple of times, but
He never responded.
How is it that you're, like, all excited, can't wait, you're ready to go, ready to sign the contract until I actually walk in the office?
Yeah, that's sad, Ellen, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Very.
I mean, so I'm sure you've come across articles and you've seen firsthand what COVID-19 has done. The disproportionately, we've all watched what's happening with COVID-19 and the African-American community.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us if you've seen any firsthand, do you have any firsthand accounts of what you're seeing on the ground?
Oh my gosh. Well, I did have a person, a friend of mine, who passed away. He and his wife both passed away, and they have a 16-year-old son. And so now the son is on his own. And Eugene, I'm a dancer. I'm a, what's called a Chicago style stepper.
Woo, Al.
So it was very ironic because that particular weekend when he passed, a lot of pictures came up. You know how Facebook memories mm-hmm. pop up? And we had all gone, my group and different groups, we had gone to, we had taken a trip to Jacksonville, and it was the anniversary, so all the pictures started popping up for us, like, you know, that trip that we took to Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And, like, it was a three-day weekend, so the mm-hmm. memories were popping up all weekend long. And it was so sad because he's, like, one of those, like, big-hearted type of people. Mm-hmm. He's big-hearted, very loving, just like an angel type of person that I would call an angel on earth. And he loved to play the saxophone.
Sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's very sad. They have a 16-year-old child on
his
own.
But, you know? And his wife passed like 2 weeks later. And so they have a 16-year-old son who's like on his own now.
Right.
Now, I want to say that because I believe that he really listened to the Trump thing. He loved, like, getting out there.
Without a mask.
Without a mask.
So he because of the leadership.
Right.
He listened to what they were saying.
Right. And he didn't really believe that, okay, we don't know, that's okay. It's nothing worse than catching a cold or catching the flu. And so many people believe that. But, of course, it is much worse.
Yeah.
I do understand that. Initially, the scientists were trying to figure out what was what in the beginning. But I, you know, when you listen to the recordings where Trump says that this is
a hoax,
a hoax, but then on the privately, he's saying it's deadly. So which one is it? Is it a hoax or is it deadly?
It is frustrating.
Very frustrating.
Especially when you have friends and family that choose not to believe it, right?
Exactly.
So where do we go from here, Wanda? I mean, you've got your business. Are you still working? Are you still
I am.
Able? Okay. But where do we go from here as a country, as a nation, as an African-American woman who's watching all these neighborhoods that we all live in? People just don't come out to vote. What do we say to them? We can't shake people, but what do we say to them about this precious vote?
Right. So what I've been doing, I've been volunteering with a couple of organizations. And as you know, I work more so with the Black Women's Roundtable. And what we've been doing is we've been like educating people. It's part of, you know, knowledge is power. So when people understand this affects you personally, a lot of people think that it doesn't matter, but this is going to affect whether or not you have affordable housing. This is going to affect whether or not you have insurance or even just the opportunity to have insurance.
Or pre-existing conditions.
Exactly.
Which we all know someone with it.
And what a lot of people are not aware of is that on November 10th, now this is after the election, on November 10th, there's another hearing. And if Trump wins, there's going to be millions and millions of people immediately off of insurance. Supposedly, he has another plan in place, but from everything that I've read, it doesn't come close to what ACA offers. Now, the sad part about it is ever since Trump's been in office, he's been slowly dismantling ACA. So,
and we know he's going to put the rich people first.
Right.
We see it.
Right. And less people like...
insurance companies, mm-hmm. pharmaceutical companies, mm-hmm. CEOs.
Every year since Trump's been in office, there's been less and less people covered by ACA. But now, this hearing, and it's of course, I feel like it's intentional because even a lot of Trump supporters are going to be without insurance. So I feel like it's intentional that it's scheduled after the election, because once you vote for him and you get him in the office, too bad, so sad for you. thanks for the vote, but yeah. You know, too bad, so sad.
It's almost like you want people to lead by example, right? You want the mother and the father to sit down with their children and have a 10-minute conversation a day. How was your day? Mm-hmm. I mean, people just don't have conversations anymore. What did you do today? And they might tell you something and then you can counteract mm-hmm. and say something else. Mm-hmm. And I know, Ellen, we've talked about this before where you come home from school and you're not a latchkey kid. That's right. You have conversation, intelligent conversations with each other. And then it goes in. Life is politics.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you have to know. I mean, even as a kid, you have to know how all of it works.
Yes.
Because you have to know how to even debate in school, right?
Yes.
You need to be able to defend yourself in front of your teacher or defend yourself in front of the, you know, a dean, if that be the case, to try and get your grades right or whatever, right?
Right.
I mean, it's all, everything is politics, every single thing that we do. And for people not to learn how to stand up for themselves and realize that voting is a big part of that, of making sure that they're standing up for themselves and standing up for what they believe in
exactly.
and what they want, it's sinful.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing with people deciding what they want to buy in the stores, right? I mean, when you buy things, you're basically working politics. I mean, your decision of what to buy, what not to buy, who to support, who not to support, all
and
politics.
And what to eat.
What to eat, what not to eat,
yes.
all politics. And how you react to that and how people react to that in general is the strength of our nation, should be the strength of our nation. It should be the strength of us as a community, as a fellowship, to be able to handle those things together. And we're not right now.
Right. And Wanda, you know, the other thing too, when you sit down with your children or a neighbor or friends, or even if you reach out to someone, they don't even have to be of the same political party. But once you have a conversation, we find that all of us agree that
right.
we need food, water, shelter, insurance, affordable housing.
Yes.
Right?
We have a lot
I mean,
more in common.
Right.
Than...
So how do we get more people to put down their devices and sit down with their children and say, how was your day today? The child might tell you how their day was. And then you go into a conversation about, how did your food get from the grocer to the refrigerator to the table, and what are you eating? And mm-hmm. that right there is politics, correct?
It is, exactly. So I think that what needs to happen is, like you said, whether it's, like I have a six-year-old niece, and she, when she watches TV, she knows who, she knows, oh, that's Trump, or that's Michelle Obama, or, you know, that's Sasha. So she already knows, she'll even tell me different things about Martin Luther King wouldn't do that. When we're listening, so having the conversation and making it, I think sometimes making it fun, I mean, it doesn't always have to be fun, but just kind of breaking it down where it's easily understandable. I think that part of what's really getting people's attentions is the, like, the cases with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. I just feel like those are really, those type of cases are really an awakening, because we're able to see, like, years ago,
the power of the camera.
Right, the power of the camera. Years ago, people would complain about getting, you know, stopped by the police, but now we can see it, and now we can see.
And people were complaining they didn't have access to information.
Exactly.
But now it's happening in real time. Mm-hmm. We also Ahmaud Arbery. Even if they didn't want the kid checking out that house under construction, they didn't have to kill him.
Exactly.
You know, chase him away with a broom or something.
Yes.
You know, like they used to do before, a fist fight, like Ellen always says, a good old fashioned fist fight. But don't kill the kid. He's somebody's son.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, but I mean, so here we have 2 minutes left. You're a business owner. You've seen firsthand what COVID-19 has done to the people of color and the communities and healthcare and all this. Where do we go from here with, you know, trying to bring people together and unite our country against all the hate and division and fear?
Mm-hmm. I say, first of all, what we do is we connect with other organizations. I mean, there's other organizations out there that are, like, they're either nonprofits or they're churches, just different organizations to kind of come together and also do an outreach with the people who they have on their distribution list, and the people who are their family members and friends. So you kind of form a network and kind of be on the same page. After that, kind of go, I would say, out into, like, you know, different stores, barbershops, salons, you know, where people are going to congregate and where people are going to come to, and try to get a voice, try to help them be a partner with you. So when you partner and get the information out, you know, doesn't have to always be a long conversation, but flyers, letters, just kind of have information readily available for people to pick up. If somebody comes to your barbershop, here, have this flyer in it. So I think there's so many different ways or so many different avenues that we can
reach out.
Right, right.
Well, you know, somebody sent me a private message this morning and said, oh, you're always fighting for people who are irresponsible and have children. And I said, no, I'm not fighting for people who are irresponsible. I'm fighting to give people education, sex education at appropriate ages, so they don't have a child and they can't have it.
Right.
That's right. Exactly right. Well, once again, another fantastic edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Wanda, thank you so much. Wanda's website is posted on our Sita Media page as well, and we will make sure that we get that on all of our archives. Visit SitaMediaInc.com for all of our past shows. And once again, Sita, thank you so much for another fantastic Monday. You're in Cocoa, Florida on www.1510 WWBC.